Discover how to leverage joy to build a multi-million dollar property portfolio in today's episode with Paul Graham. Paul Graham increased his property net worth 7 times over 18 months with property, and he also helps investors offset their tax liabilities by investing in oil and gas syndications and uses creative financing to purchase luxury short-term rentals and continues to connect with others on their true passion and purpose. So Paul Graham, please tell us, how can entrepreneurs leverage joy to build a multi-million dollar property portfolio?
Property Wealth Strategies podcast with Lily Patrashku shares world's most influential property investors, sharing their strategies for making money with property.
Yeah, Lily, I'm super excited to share. I mean, you know, specifically on leveraging joy is, you know, kind of a human emotion, right? But it's one thing I found where oftentimes we try to seek joy when in reality we have it within ourselves. And so why that's really important is as you're building your property portfolio, if you're constantly trying to, you know, find joy or search for it, or you believe it doesn't exist, the same thing's going to happen with leads and opportunities for your, you know, investment-based business, right? If you are coming from a sense of abundance and a sense of gratitude internally, you then are naturally going to find the people just like yourself, right? Who has an amazing podcast, who, you know, talks about this. And, you know, we can share, right? Same thing to say, hey, like, let's meet with other property owners and things like that. Another way to say is like, if we believe that it's possible or not possible, then so be it, right? And so ultimately, if we believe joy is within us and we share it and we're grateful for it, then we will have it. Same thing, like I said, with leads and opportunities for investments. If we believe there's opportunities out there, regardless of what the macro market is, we can then find those opportunities. I'm seeing a lot of specifically like multifamily investors right now being like, hey, there's like no deals. Well, there might be less deals, right? But there's always something to do in terms of investing. It just might take a little bit more work and it might be different to find or acquire or things like that. That's why things like relationship capital, marketing, and a number of other things are really, really important. So that's how I would say, you know, finding that joy to leverage into that multi-million dollar portfolio. Keyword also being multi-million, where it's not just one, right? Now it could be one property that's a lot, but the idea you have several opportunities to do it, and it's not just a, you know, one-time thing, right? Joy is a sense of abundance, which means it could be consistent. It's not like a sandwich. When you eat a sandwich, the sandwich goes away, right? So.
Thank you. Tell us, why is it important to be joyful to build a multi-million dollar property portfolio? And I'm talking, for example, for me, I find that if I'm not joyful when I'm working, it's like there's no point to even do it. Whereas I find that when you are joyful, I find that when you have like a positive frame of mind, you attract more of those positive opportunities and situations. And the opposite is true as well. I find that sometimes when, let's say, I have a bad situation, it's like all bad situations tend to come in threes. So just something bad happened. Then like I'm in a sad, angry kind of state, and because of that I attract more, you know, bad people, bad situations, scammers, people who want to take advantage. And I find that it's so easy to kind of get into that loop where you attract the same kind of things in your life as well. So tell us more about why is it so important for joy to be present so you can that multi-million dollar property portfolio. And how can entrepreneurs get it? Because let's say, imagine you have a wife that you don't like, you have perhaps a bank account that you don't like, you have, perhaps a situation where you feel stuck. Even let's say you could be, you can even have a really great bank account, but a wife that you dislike. Okay. So you could find that actually you don't have that much joy in your life. How do you find joy and how do you use it to fuel your property portfolio, you know, multi-million dollar idea?
Yeah, certainly. Amazing questions where ultimately, at least my, you know, personal experience of like a decade worth is just like condensed into these two things, right? And I've seen a lot of people, you know, experience kind of the same. That's why I have my brand, The Investor's Guide to Joy, right? The intention where we often want to reach that, you know, million or multi-million dollar, you know, status, right? But we ultimately either lose ourselves along the way, or when we reach that, what we think is the summit, it's actually a false summit, right? And so to your, you know, first question, like, why is it important? Well, one, relationship capital. Well, what is relationship capital? Relationship capital is then the ability to connect with other humans in an authentic way. Why this is beneficial and what I've experienced, I've had opportunities where just me being myself and wanting to help or support and add value, or we just connect, operate the same sort of way, what have you, right? I was given the opportunity to have 20% equity, well, 23% equity in a company, meaning that I didn't have to work extremely hard to then do, to have, to receive. I just was, right? And so it's to say that like some things just come to us, right? If we just are those people. People want, you know, good people to succeed because they also see themselves in that, or in you as well, right? So it's absolutely important to be like your true, authentic, genuine self of just being a person, right, to other people, especially in the age of AI and social media. It's important to be like, again, your, you know, self, to then connect and be authentic, not just be another AI robot, right? So that's kind of the other thing I found. And it's also important because imagine you had everything you ever wanted, right? Think of whatever that might be: house, car, vacation, bank account number, whatever initially comes to mind, right? Maybe some other things come too. If you sit with those things and you reflect on those things, two things will happen. One, you'll desensitize yourself to it. And the second is that you'll slowly either start to feel, or eventually will feel, basically the sense of emptiness. Because ultimately, humans don't want to collect stuff. They want to collect connection, right? And so ultimately, if we're only focused on this number in our bank accounts, then all we'll have is that, you know, aspect, but we won't, again, have what the human heart and mind ultimately truly wants, because it's based on survival, right? If we have a bunch of food and we have no one to share it with, well, then we're going to feel pretty darn lonely, right? Same thing of sorts. If you have a bunch of money and you don't have a lot of people to share it with, and they only really want you for your money, well, again, you're going to feel that those sort of feelings, which are tougher to, again, connect, right? So that's important. And how that relates to your question in terms of like how to get it, it's then to say, well, desensitize yourself. Well, how do you desensitize yourself? So two things I would recommend is one, like, for example, on my website, I have a bunch of, a couple of resources, like a three-year vision, for example. And in by doing a three-year vision or even a life well-lived, which is almost like a eulogy, and reflecting on your life of like, what would you want it to look like, feel like, sound like? What would you want other people to talk about how you lived and how you operated, how you gave and how generous you were and things like that? That then puts into perspective like who you really should or really ultimately like want to be, right? And by then also saying, okay, so I really want to have like this net worth or number of properties or whatever it might be. Let's just take net worth, for example. Okay, so you have that net worth. Then it's to say like, great, take your Chase or whatever bank account you have, right? Print off just the home screen, go into Photoshop or whatever, right? And edit it and put in like what that number would be. And ultimately what I have found is you, again, desensitize yourself. And one, it doesn't become as scary. But the other thing is that it's not going to be as exciting, or at least it wasn't for me. Again, it's just a number on a screen. Like it didn't really motivate me in terms of like a why, in terms of just of a number. And so ultimately joy was then the biggest thing. And joy ultimately came with relationship capital, like I mentioned. So that's how I would recommend in the sense of, you know, why is it important? It's deeper than just, you know, having or doing. It's also receiving. It's also giving, right? One story that comes to mind is a guy I'm connected to who's in Florida. The deal has just gone completely south. He's probably going to lose about $1.5 million on it, right? He wants to have the same listing broker that brought him the deal, the same initial general contractor to finish the deal. Now, the subcontractors have changed because of just, you know, craziness, just, you know, kind of stuff, right? But ultimately, he wants to do well and good by these people, even though he's going to lose about $1.5 million on the deal, right? And so then it's just to say, like, wow, what, I believe an incredible person. I want to be more around him and be more like him and know more people that he knows, in the sense of he is just joyful to live and joyful to do what he's doing. And he also gets enjoyment of connecting with other people. Oh, and he also has an 8-figure net worth, right? So by having that route, you're just going to have a drastically different experience. Because imagine the person you meet who's just like, I don't know, sad or short or just not there, right? Instead of the other individual who's like, wow, I'm so amazing today. Like, how are you doing? It's like, well, I wasn't really having the best day, but with your energy or just how you're talking or how you believe in me, like, I feel great. Type of thing, right? So those sort of things I found have been incredibly beneficial on this idea of, like, why is it important, and then how to actually, like, go about and do it tactically, and not just make it like a, oh yeah, have more joy. Like, joy compared to what, right? But we all know in our heart of hearts, like, what that feels like and what that is, what being generous, what being kind, what being helpful to someone else is, and we want to lean more into that. Because as I mentioned, I've had personal benefits of, again, relationship capital and, like, personal capital come to me, because people just naturally want to see me win and they naturally want other people to win. That's a great deal source, right? It doesn't always need to be this, like, marketing engine sort of thing. Yes, that's certainly important, but that doesn't need to be the main driver. So,
thank you. Tell us, how did you leverage joy to build a multi-million dollar property portfolio yourself? Like, what specific actions did you take? Give us 3 case studies where you found joy, and integrating joy in your behavior was the key driver for you to close deals, or, I don't know, to do something that led you towards having a multi-million dollar property portfolio.
Yeah. So, the first one, that comes to mind is the idea of loving the walk. Why that's important and being joyful in, like, all moments, is simply because if you want to build something, for example, I have a background in software and also in commercial real estate and fundraising as well. But point is, like, I don't know how it's going to end up, right? You know, I could talk to someone on the way to dinner tonight and they could be my next investor, right? I could also call 1,000 people and none of them could be my investors, right? We don't know sometimes how things are going to play out. But ultimately, the idea of just loving the walk, and, you know, as things come up, we just navigate around them, learn from them, take time off, but also, you know, drive forward. That's been a big thing. And that was really helpful when I was just when I started in commercial real estate, right? Because I knew how it was kind of going to go, because I talked to over 1,500 brokers when I was at a commercial real estate software company. And so I was like, yeah, I could totally do this, right? But I realized that, like, I was also asking their success stories and I was also asking their failures, but I didn't know a lot about their random Tuesday at a 3 p.m., if you will, right? And so just being like, hey, no, I want to enjoy this, or how can I enjoy where I'm at or what I'm doing, is important. So that's an example and a thought of, like, when I was in, you know, commercial real estate, as kind of a case study. Next thing comes to mind is the idea of, like, being curious and not seeking. And so what that, or not searching, excuse me. So seeking and not searching, meaning that you want to be curious, but not having a definite outcome. Example, I want to buy a property. If I'm like, this property has to be mine, how do I get it? What's going to happen? You're going to spend a lot of time on it. You're potentially going to overpay for it. You're possibly going to fudge the numbers, maybe intentionally, but maybe not, because you're just kind of having confirmation bias, because you're like, this is the best deal. I have to have this, right? That is very different than saying, hey, I'm looking for properties that are about this, that fit this type of criteria. What if you maybe, you know, change the zoning and you scrape the property and then you developed the ideal property that, you know, you were looking for, and maybe it was even better than the one you were initial going for. So I've had that kind of situation, right? Where instead of, like, square peg, round hole, or just trying to solve, sometimes, like, solving the problem is the problem. If it's not necessarily falling into place or it's not the right fit, it may not be the right deal, opportunity, property, things like that. And that also goes for people, right? Property management companies, business partners, things like that, right? But again, we'll kind of focus just on the property piece, because, you know, humans are challenging to understand, right? We sometimes challenge to understand ourselves. But that goes into kind of the last piece, and that's on the idea of discipline. So we've heard, you know, discipline, do repeated things like that. Specifically, how that comes to be is on the sense of there's a different type of really investor, if you will, right? That has joy, that is kind of going out and just like wants to build, who is calling one person a day, five people a day, and 50 people a day, right? I can have joy, but I could also have tenacity. I can also have structure. I can also have discipline. And so one thing I also want to share is like, joy does not necessarily mean timidness, right? So we can still be someone who is disciplined, focused, underwriting properties, yes, meeting with people and things like that, but we need to ensure like the inputs that we have also produce the potential outputs that we want. If we want to buy a property, we need to underwrite deals. If we're not underwriting deals, then we don't even have a property to possibly buy, to bring on partners with property management and things like that. So that's another thing I've experienced from like a case study standpoint to your question, where if we're not consistent and we're more focused on being the best than we are the outcome, we're gonna, you know, fail, right? It's the idea of the Potter class, right? Where if you had two groups of students and you had one of them to produce the most amount of pots that they could, and the other one to produce the best pot they could, the students that ultimately produced the most pots they could, they found that they produced, yes, better, there are more pots, obviously, but they actually produced exponentially better pots. Why? Because they had more reps with it. And so that's an important thing, is like, even though joy is a very calm, relational connection type thing, that also doesn't mean you sit at your chair hoping and waiting and wishing and praying for a deal to come, if you will. So that's a huge important thing that I've also found, is it's not just, you know, sitting on our hands, it's also taking action, but it's who you are as you take repeated action.
Thank you. How can entrepreneurs avoid being, give us an example of entrepreneurs who have not leveraged joy. So for example, they were sad, they were angry, they got upset over little details, and because of that, they blew their chance at closing one or multiple business deals for a property that could have led them to become multimillionaire property investors.
Yeah. So I can definitely think of one that I tangentially experienced, and I'll think of one, you know, for myself. And it's a great, great question. So it was a situation where essentially I was a commercial real estate broker, and we were, you know, giving the option between, you know, two people. One investor was just absolutely incredibly challenging to deal with. Well, what naturally happened? Well, it took a little longer for them to like follow back up. And then also when they did, they were like, I need this stuff now. And it's like, hey, I have like 12 other things going on. Like, let me go back to you, or hey, let's schedule a time, or things like that. It was just such a challenge to not only like work with them, but kind of like be around them, and also just like the just feeling of anxiety and stress of it too. Where, you know, lo and behold, you know, the numbers didn't work out, and it just was what it was, right? But it was just that feeling like, I just don't want that. Like, imagine being on the playground and just being like, I don't really want to play with you, right? That then makes it tough to, especially as you're an investor talking to brokers, coming at from a sense of, hey, like, I want to add value. I want to get to know you. I'd love to, you know, learn more about you, and continue to just be, I don't want to say necessarily like their friend, but in some ways just treat, again, kind of the human without, you know, overly kind of like sucking up to them sort of thing, right? People like to work with people that they like to work with. So especially as you become an investor and more seasoned, you're naturally going to build relationships. And so that's naturally the biggest thing, is you want to focus on building the relationship, and then the deals will come. Because again, then you get things like pocket listings, you have, you know, special insights, you have understandings, you have people come to you as opposed to you always having to come to them, things like that. So that's kind of just a tangential experience. But, you know, I've seen for, you know, even myself, where just simply asking, it was a property in Texas what is, I'll need to think of the, it's one of the beach towns, Galveston. It was in Galveston. It was a really cool, like, multifamily, mixed use property that also had like a cafe that, you know, was very underrun, all this stuff, right? Very, very value add. And I ended up talking to the owner. We talked for like, I don't know, an hour or so, and it just kind of became like connections. Now the deal didn't, you know, work out for my sense, but, he was just like, hey, like, I just really appreciate you, connecting and like talking with me. Most people are like wanting to, you know, get it for a third of the price or things like that. And he was in his middle to late 70s, I want to say. So he's been around, right? And so ultimately that was then just a good reminder for myself to say that like it was more focused on like the person, the human, the connection sort of piece. I learned more about what, why he really wanted to sell it. And like I said, the deal itself didn't, you know, work out for myself. But it also gave him the opportunity to be like, oh, hey, maybe I should talk to more people like this, or I should evaluate the property more just because of the, you know, retail space too. And I was able to add value with him and connection with him. Again, although the deal didn't work out, I could, you know, certainly if I was buying in that market, you know, call him up or others like him and have that opportunity. Again, joy can always be expanded upon. It's like a multiplier. But if you are just calling for your own self-interest and not willing to collaborate or work with others, it's going to be incredibly challenging, specifically in the multi-million dollar and above, because these are more seasoned professionals and lifetime investors and business owners. They aren't just someone who maybe has a W-2, who saved up enough money, who bought a duplex, right? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they just are not maybe the professional investor negotiator type people. And it's just going to be incredibly more challenging, and it's not going to be as fun. And sometimes I think that's why people get kind of out of the, you know, investment sort of space, is because they just want to make enough to, you know, go on their vacations, but they don't want to get to know the humans along the way, if you will. Again, where the idea of joy comes in. So
thank you. Tell us your 10 commandments for building a multimillion dollar property portfolio with joy.
Yeah. So it's a great question. And I've made basically like 15. I've kind of tried to organize them a little bit more to be like, hey, like, which one should we focus on initially or later or all this sort of stuff. So what I'll do is I'll give a list of them. And then I want other people to fill in theirs, right? Because some of them are also going to be dependent on them. And the other thing I'm really just advocate for is the idea of like the difference between mentors and guides. So a mentor can say, hey, this is where I've been, do exactly this, right? But you probably shouldn't do exactly what they say, right? Because your situation's different, your outcome's different. The, you know, it was 30 years difference, right? Type things, right? So this is going to be a little bit more of a guide, if you will, like I said, that people can kind of add to it. So the first thing is the idea of like building your financial heart and recognizing like, what is it all for? Sometimes we want to invest in more property, but in reality, we don't want the additional hassle. We kind of like our, you know, life, right? The other is going to, or kind of the next is going to be like understanding debt. Debt in the sense of leverage debt, you know, coverage debt, as well as debt as it relates to, you know, property. And then lastly, like consumer debt. These types of debts are ultimately going to change how we not only view property, but how we cover ourselves. Think of like reserves. And then also how the property, you know, it is in terms of like the loan amount or the type of loan or, you know, things like that. And then obviously consumer debt is, you know, bad. No one do it, right? But, you know, certainly we want those shoes or we want those things. But that's just a big thing I've really found. Ultimately, if we can reduce the most amount of consumer debt as possible, especially as we're building our, you know, business and our, you know, real estate investments, what I've specifically found is that we tend to not want as much, right? So it's the idea of kind of almost like a minimalism, right? And we just want a little bit, but we don't want everything. And so again, that kind of goes into the idea of like your financial heart, where it's just like, you know, why do you need a $10 million net worth? Could you really have the most amazing life ever with, you know, $200,000 a year? But again, with the relationship capital, you get to go to that island that someone else owns or things like that, right? Like not everything has to be, I have to make a bunch of money and give it all away. Again, it's the idea of like who you become along the way. I talked a little bit about relationship capital, right? And then the other thing I talked a little bit about is the idea of seeking and not searching. So again, being curious and not being formal in the sense of like, it has to be this, because again, that's just going to cause, you know, a number of issues. The other things I would encourage people to add in terms of like this, you know, guided joy or also just like building out the multi-million-dollar type portfolio is also the type of the type of stacking that you do. So think of doing equity plays. And then as you build equity, then you're going to have income. That income then needs to be offset with some sort of tax strategies. And you're also going to have cash flow along the way. So the other thing that people have an issue with is that they focus too much on maybe one or the other, or they're just not aware of it. Said another way, I know a bunch of individuals who raise capital specifically for multifamily or other real estate deals, and they are cash poor. They cannot pay their rent or really go to the grocery store next month, but they have 200 grand sitting in a property that, you know, when sold, they would get, right? So keep kind of that balance in mind. Ultimately, I would highly recommend everyone focus on cash flow type of opportunities, then build the nest egg, then do the equity plays, then do the tax saving strategies and that sort of stacking sort of formation. And then, like I mentioned, mentors and guides are different. And then the last thing that I'll at least, you know, think of for, you know, my list, and again, encourage other people to, you know, add to theirs, is really just the idea on what type of life do you want to live? And what I mean by that is oftentimes everyone goes into multifamily. Reason being is that people, well, they have lived in an apartment probably once in their life, right? It's also the biggest asset class as it relates to commercial real estate. There's also single family, which, you know, there's a number of different types of short-term rental, long-term rental, mid-term rental, co-living, even doing assisted living or sober houses, things like that. There's all these different types of niches within these different asset types. But it's the idea of like, if you love to travel, doing something like a short-term rental where at any hour of the day, someone could, you know, need you may not be the best fit. Now, I have a couple short-term rentals that are like luxury super properties being defined as like 16 or it sleeps at least 16 people. Now, I have teams and have outsourced that. But my point is that I'm aware of the types of like issues and problems and things that I would have with that. So if you have a multifamily or you have an office space or something like that, you're also going to have to spend time like managing that sort of space. And so can you basically stand, you know, constantly trying to change or look up or invest or does your lifestyle sort of flow with the type of investments you're making? Because ultimately you could have a $10 million property portfolio, but imagine if it was in an asset class or a type or, you know, some sort of logistics that ultimately didn't fit with your lifestyle. That wouldn't be the best. And so ultimately how you figure that out is you talk to different people, you learn and try and do it yourself and recognize that your, you know, ideal life essentially is going to change in some aspect, but you also want to understand what your ideal life is. And you shouldn't just jump the gun and say, oh my gosh, this person is making a bunch of money with that asset class. Let me go do that. They potentially had a background, for example, as an electrical engineer, and they worked at a lot of companies that had industrial flex space. And so they started buying a bunch of industrial flex space because they understood how to, you know, convert and just all these different factors, right? So recognizing those in terms of what your strengths are, lifestyle, and beforehand, and kind of get like a commercial real estate or real estate masterclass before you just dive in, learn all and then go niche. And that way you also know in terms of your why that you should continue here. Cause otherwise, I don't know if you've ever had this, Lily, but I've had this of like imposter syndrome. I've had that too, but I'm talking about shiny object syndrome where there's like this new asset class or type that comes out and we just get distracted. So we want to make sure that we understand like the different types and then ultimately take action on the one that we feel like is the best that fits us or is also, you know, the best in terms of the kind of market timing, right? We also want to be aware of those. So like I said, those are the ones that I'll put in, but I definitely want people to kind of fill out the rest of them with their own ideas that come to mind.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can find you.
Online being one, my website, Investor's Guide to Joy. I also mainly post on LinkedIn, Paul H. Graham. And you know, my YouTube, it's Paul Graham, share a lot of information on just general finance, wealth building, wealth preserving, and, tax strategy, for individuals to exactly do this, right? Increase their wealth, through, you know, things like real estate.
Thank you.
Follow me for more property wealth strategies.